go. Let's turn over to Genesis. Let's do this. Turn over to Genesis chapter 39. Okay? We're going to start there. He said, we already did it. I'll tell you what we're going to do. Okay? All right? So tonight we're going to be talking about an interesting family reunion. Has anybody ever had an interesting family reunion? I mean, those are so much fun, aren't they? You get there and only immediate families talk to each other, right? Have you ever been to one of those? Okay. And then the older ones, all they talk about, back in the good old days, we used to do this at family reunion and that at family reunion. And then we don't do any of that anymore. But anyway, some of them are really good. Get to connect with people. Bring up good memories. Connect again after so long. Do you know what? Joseph's going to have a really interesting family reunion tonight. And we're going to see how he handles the situation. He's graduated. Remember, last week was graduation day. He graduated from his trial in slavery and in prison to be elevated to being second in command. You remember when Pharaoh says, if we could find a man that is filled with the Spirit of God that can do this job. And he says, oh, look, he's right in front of us. And they picked him to be able to handle it. And so Pharaoh says, I'm still in charge, but you're going to be handling everything that needs to be handled. Which would be a pretty big job, wouldn't it? So he jumps into this trial, understanding that there is going to be 7 good years of crop production, but there will be 7 bad years. And he has to handle the situation to make sure that Egypt survives through it. So we're now into the famine. And do you think that that would be a trial for you? Anybody? How many of you think that that would be a pretty major trial? Okay. I mean, that would be difficult trying to feed your own family, because we understand that in the good years, he ends up having 2 sons. But yet he has to face this famine, understanding that he has to feed his own family, but he's also caretaker for all of Egypt. And then he finds out that there's all these other countries surrounding that also need some help. And so the level of trial, the level of pressure is overwhelming for a natural human being. Would you agree with me on that? That's overwhelming. And then his brothers show up. Now, if you like your brother, that's cool. But if your brothers threw you into a pit, wanted to kill you, then sold you into slavery, and then lied to your dad about you, how would you like that reunion? Anybody ready for that kind of a reunion? In fact, I'm not sure that any of us have had to face that kind of a reunion. But to think of it like this, okay? So he's already in a trial. And then he's faced with another one. How many of you like to handle one thing at a time? Like when you get your plate of food, you start with the chicken, and then you move to the corn, then you move to the mashed potatoes. Some of you can mix the mashed potatoes and the corn together because that's accepted, okay? That's the only accepted thing. The rest of the mixing should not happen. Some of you who like to mix all your food together are insane, okay? You need help. The altar is open, right? It's crazy because it's trying to process one thing at a time. Now, if you have 17 children, which I don't think anybody has, okay, all of a sudden one comes to you and says, this is the season that we're in. Johnny just puked. That's an exciting moment, isn't it? Then another one comes to you. The dog just ripped up half the couch. That's the moment when you just look up at God and say, why? why me, right? How many of you done that? You don't need to confess your sin tonight. Okay, but how many of us have... No, just one thing at a time. You ever had somebody trying to talk to you, and then all of a sudden somebody else tries to come and talk to you at the same time? And you're just like, oh, okay. Just stop. I'm going to talk here. When I'm done, I'll move to the next person. Do you feel that, Jackie, at junior high? Does that ever happen to you? Okay, I know that happens to most of us in our lives, okay? And we're just saying, one at a time. What about trials? How do you fare when you're facing one trial and you say, okay, God, I know you're good in this trial. And I know that you're sovereign in this trial. And then another one happens while you're still dealing with the first one. How do you respond? Now, if I think that this would be encouraging to you, because there's something that I started noticing just in this section. But if you were to go throughout the entirety of Genesis and to mark all of the sections where God is actively engaged with his people, when he's actively being sovereign and showing his sovereignty in the midst of his people, in the good times and in the bad times, if you would go in and underline every single verse, you might need to get another pen. Because that's how invested our God is. Which when you run into a trial and then all of a sudden another trial hits, you need to be reminded of this. So going to chapter 39, you hit verse 3. Now, if you read fast and look through your Bible, we're going to try to go through these verses. This is just from 39 to 42. We're going to handle some verses. You see what's going on here in verse number 3. And it says, and his master saw that the Lord was with him and that the Lord made all that he did to prosper in his hand. What was happening? God moving through Joseph to make everything prosper in his hand. You move to verse number 5. Okay? See what happens here. And it came to pass from the time that he had made him overseer in his house and over all that he had, that the Lord blessed the Egyptian's house for Joseph's sake. Who was actively engaged? God was actively engaged. And the blessing of the Lord was upon all that he had in the house and in the field. Go to verse 21. But the Lord was with Joseph. Who's engaged here? God is. God is engaged with Joseph and showed him mercy and gave him favor in the sight of the keeper of the prison. So who was with Joseph when he was sold into slavery? God was. And God was the one that made him prosper. And who was with him when he was in the prison? God was. God was the one that made him prosper. Verse 23. The keeper of the prison looked not to anything that was under his hand because the Lord was with him. And that which he did, the Lord made it to prosper. Are you seeing the theme that's being placed throughout Genesis? Because we're going to go forward. We're going to go forward into another one. All right. You go into chapter 40 and in verse 8, what does it say? And it says, and they said unto him, we have dreamed a dream and there is no interpreter of it. Helpless guys. They're moved with emotion. And yet it says, and Joseph said unto them, do not interpretations belong to God? Tell me them, and I pray you. Man, he's ready to go. Who's going to be actively engaged in interpreting these dreams? God is. And that's exactly who Joseph goes to. Chapter 41 and verse 16. And Joseph answered Pharaoh. This is how he answered him. We're messing with some dreams again. Joseph answered Pharaoh saying, it is not in me. God shall give Pharaoh an answer of peace. God. He's going to give him the answer. He's the one actively engaged. You move into verse number 25. And Joseph said unto Pharaoh, the dream of Pharaoh is one. God hath showed Pharaoh what he is about to do, being actively engaged. And he prepares this country for it. Verse 28, this is the thing which I have spoken unto Pharaoh. What God is about to do, he showeth unto Pharaoh. We see it again. And then in 41:32, it says, and for that the dream was doubled unto Pharaoh twice. It is because the thing is established by God. and God will shortly bring it to pass. You go to verse 38, and Pharaoh said unto his servants, can we find such a one as this, a man in whom the Spirit of God is? The Spirit of God within a man, God actively engaged. Verse 51 says, and Joseph called the name of the firstborn Manasseh. Why? For God said, he hath made me forget all my toil and all my father's house. I left it all behind because of God. He helped me overcome that. If you're here and you think that the toil, that the trial is too big and you could never let it go, guess what? Joseph could. And listen, Joseph is not any less human being than what you are. Two human beings just grasping onto God being involved in their lives. We can do this because of God. But you know, he goes on in verse 52, in the name of the second called he Ephraim, for God hath caused me to be fruitful in the land of my affliction. It's not my circumstances that have kept me at bay. God, even in my tough circumstances, you have caused me to be fruitful. God involved. It's beautiful. Now, here's where we're jumping into the chapter for tonight. And you're going to see this ahead of time because I think this helps us prepare. Because, you know, God's involved in moving and in prospering and bringing blessing. But he's also involved in helping us to see how our sin can affect us. And you see in 42 and verse 28, and says, and he said unto his brethren, my money is restored, and lo, it is even in my sack. And their heart failed them, and they were afraid, saying one to another, what is this that God hath done unto us? What is God doing? And listen, this is one of the things that is going to be the best thing for these men to understand, is God at work even in correcting where we have gone wrong. And we're going to see that tonight. So let's jump into the beginning of chapter 42. Let's jump into the beginning of chapter 42. And I think that these first few verses are just rather funny to me. I think that they're funny, and you'll get why. Because I entitled the first point, what are you looking at? Okay, what are you looking at? And you'll know why. Okay, verse number one, it goes in here. Now when Jacob saw that there was corn in Egypt, or grain, corn or grain, Jacob said unto his sons, why do you look one upon another? Why are you looking at each other? And he said, behold, I have heard that there is corn in Egypt. Get you down thither and buy for us from thence, that we may live and not die. Have you ever talked to your kids like that? Have you ever supervised your crew and you say, why are you looking at each other? Get to work. It goes in verse 3 and says, and Joseph's 10 brethren went down to buy corn in Egypt. So they got to work. You say, well, what's going on here? Well, Jacob, which is, it's super interesting how he jumps into this. He goes in here and he sees that there is a problem. He sees that there's a problem right in front of him. He says, hey, listen, there is sustenance available. You just got to go find it. Hey, stop looking at each other and get to work. Go get it. And it's very interesting because you'll find that it says, and Jacob saw that there was corn in Egypt, and he saw that the brothers were looking at each other. But yet we find that he's going to start having, in fact, he might already be having the same issue that his dad had at the end of his life. And that was, you'll find out in chapter 48, that his eyes were actually dimming to the point where he didn't even know who the boys were that coming up to him that was Joseph's sons. And so you find that in just a couple of chapters, you find that Jacob is actually starting to have troubles with his eyesight, but he can see clearer than his boys can. You also find that there's a difference between these boys and Joseph, because when there was a problem for Joseph, what did he do? Did he sit around? No, he got to it. He went to work. He saw the problem that needed to be fixed. He saw what needed to be stewarded, and he jumped to it and did what he needed to do. And yet we find that these brothers are the opposite side of the case, where they're just sitting around looking at each other. But why are they looking at each other? Because they know where the food is. It's just if they go there, then their sin might be revealed. Have you ever thought about that? Guys, what do? Isn't that where Joseph was heading? Who wants to do that? Who wants to go that direction? What if Dad finds out? And yet this is what he's committed them to. And so as they're just looking around at each other, they decide to get up. But you know what's interesting? It doesn't say Jacob's sons here. It says, and Joseph's 10 brethren went down to buy corn in Egypt. Why does it say that? Because even though they've kicked him out of the family, he's still a part of it. He's still connected. And guess what? He's going to be the one that's going to help them to survive what is ahead. You go into verse number 4, but Benjamin, Joseph's brother. You see that again. It's just interesting details that you see throughout Scripture, but Joseph's brother. Jacob sent not with his brethren, for he said, lest peradventure mischief befall him. Does Jacob trust those 10 brothers? He doesn't trust them. And guess what? I think the favoritism is still showing through. You're still seeing this besetting sin that's in Jacob's life because Benjamin gets to stay home. Those brothers, whatever. But Benjamin, I keep him close. He's my favorite. So we're still having turmoil in the family. There's still disruption there. But yet he says, hey, look, what are you looking at? Get to it. And they start heading down. And it says in verse number 5, and the sons of Israel came to buy corn among those that came, for the famine was in the land of Canaan. So this famine has gone in a huge area. And they're not the only ones going to Egypt for help. So then you ask yourself, what is God doing? What is God doing? There's three questions that we're going to be dealing with here tonight. You know, what are you looking at? Obviously, that was a little humor. Then what is God doing? How is he working in this situation? Verse number 6, it says, and Joseph was the governor over the land. And he it was that sold to all the people of the land. Can you imagine a job like that? And that's why last week I brought to you, I said, he didn't just get second in command and sit back in his lazy boy and direct everybody else to do all the job. He was actually out there doing the work. He was the one that all of the food being given away and sold, that was coming through Joseph. He was still hard at work in his trial. And so it was he that sold to all the people of the land, and Joseph's brethren came and bowed down themselves before him with their faces to the earth. Does that remind anybody of anything? Let me say that again. They came, they bowed down themselves before him with their faces to the earth. Josh, would you ever bow down to your brother Jeremy? No, in fact, you'd probably want him to bow down to you, right? I would never bow down to my sisters. Never. No, I try to make them bow down to me. Yeah. Because that's what brothers do, right? We're born for adversity. It's biblical, okay? All right. Maybe I took that wrong. But anyway. But when you see that, and you say they bow down, so it's not like they recognize him, because we'll actually see that they don't recognize him. But here it is that God is revealing that the dream that he had had, the two dreams, actually, that came to him, that here he was, all of his brothers, all of his family bowing down to him. This is coming true. Verse number 7, and Joseph saw his brethren and he knew them, but made himself strange unto them and spake roughly unto them. And he said unto them, whence come ye? And they said, from the land of Canaan to buy food. So he recognizes them, but they don't recognize him. How could you not recognize your brother? Well, there's been quite a few years. It's been over a decade that he's been away. Guess what? He's going to be taking on the Egyptian way of facial hair, of the way that they do things. And yet even he tries to disguise his voice. So I don't know if he has more of a lighter voice. Like some guys do, and he just, oh, guys, hey, what's going on? And it went roughly. Did you see that? And he spoke roughly to him. He tried to even change his voice to where he could disguise himself. They had no idea who they were bowing down to, but they were there to buy some food. And verse 8, and Joseph knew his brethren, but they knew not him. And Joseph remembered the dreams which he dreamed of them and said unto them, ye are spies. To see the nakedness of the land ye are come. In verse 10, and they said unto him, nay, my Lord, but to buy food are thy servants come. Again, I could never call my sisters Lordess. I guess that was the feminine word of the term of that, okay? But you're just not going to find this, especially amongst guys who sold their brother into slavery. They do not recognize him. And yet, nay, my Lord, but to buy food are thy servants come. We are your servants. They are totally desperate before him. They're trying to plead their case. He says, hey, you're spies. You're just trying to check us out. Which doesn't make any sense because all these other Canaanites are coming around. They're coming right along with them. Why is he picking them out from amongst all these other people? And yet he's moving in a direction and a test that he's going to be giving. In verse 11, it says, we are all one man's sons. We are true men. Thy servants are no spies. You can trust us. Verse 12, and he said unto them, nay, but to see the nakedness of the land ye are come. And verse 13, and they said, thy servants are 12 brethren. Wait, there's 10 here. What happens? The sons of one man in the land of Canaan. And behold, the youngest in this is this day with our father, and one is not. Who's the one that is not? The guy that is standing right in front of them. Now, how many of us would be patient enough to keep going with this? I'm the one. I'm the one. Bow down. Keep doing it. Come on. I mean, some of us would be like that. And yet this man, Joseph, is patient and he's willing to follow through with his plan and his test. Verse 14, and Joseph said unto them, that is it that I spake unto you, saying, ye are spies. Hereby ye shall be proved. Here's your test. Ye shall not go forth hence except your youngest brother come hither. Uh-oh. That's a big problem. Verse 16, send one of you and let him fetch your brother. And ye shall be kept in prison that your words may be proved whether there be any truth in you or else by the life of Pharaoh, surely ye are spies. So one guy gets to go fetch your brother. The rest of you are going to be put in prison. You say, there we go. That's the brotherly adversity that we're looking for here. He's trying to throw them in jail. That's not his point. This isn't revenge. This isn't revenge. He's presenting a test for his brothers to see what's going to happen. And it goes on in verse 17. It says, and he put them all together into ward 3 days. So he jailed them up. He put them where they couldn't go anywhere. And in verse 18, and Joseph said unto them the third day, this do and live, for I fear God. This is what I want you to do. And if you don't do it, guess what? That's it. You're done. But you can trust me because I fear God. Can we just take a break right there for a moment? What if all Christians actually live this way? You can see my integrity. You can trust me because I fear God. There's someone bigger than me, more righteous than me, that's in control, and I submit myself to Him so you can trust me based on my awe and worship of Him. How much better of quality would the salt be if that could be something we could say? Because what did He say? Be the salt. How much brighter would the light be if Christians could follow up with any statement, "For I fear God," and it be an honest and true statement? It's just a side note, but this is where He's at. And He comes in and He presents it again in verse 19. "If ye be true men, let one of your brethren be bound in the house of your prison." So He actually switches it. He actually becomes more merciful in this sense. He says, "Go ye carry corn for the famine of your houses." So one of your brothers is going to stay here in jail. I'm going to give you food to take back to sustain your family. Verse 20, "But bring your youngest brother unto me, so that you shall your words be verified, and ye shall not die." And they did so. One guy stays behind. Verse 21, "And they said one to another, We are verily guilty concerning a brother, and that we saw the anguish of his soul when he besought us, and we would not hear. Therefore is this distress come upon us." What's going on here, folks? Guilt. What happens when we sin and we don't confront that sin, we don't take care of that sin, we don't ask for forgiveness, we don't keep a fresh slate with God and with man? What happens when we don't take care of the sin that is besetting us? This right here. Guilt. This is the anguish of our soul, as he describes himself. And in verse 22, "And then all of a sudden, Reuben," he's got to put in his 2 cents. Remember what happened with Reuben? He says, "Don't kill him." Remember when they threw him into the pit? They were ready to kill him. He says, "Don't kill him." And he was going to sneak in afterwards and try to get him out to get him back to dad, because he's got a lot of brownie points to earn because he really messed up bad earlier on. And he says, he answered and said, "Spake I not unto you, saying, Do not sin against the child, and ye would not hear." What happens when sin starts to tear you apart? We start tearing other people apart, because hurt people hurt people. All of a sudden, this is your fault. Have you ever turned into the blame game whenever sin's at the door? We got to blame somebody. Where did that originate, by the way? I think it was in the garden somewhere, wasn't it? Don't you love Adam's response? "Well, God, it was this wife you gave me." Oh, how come God didn't just strike him dead right then? I mean, think about that. Are we good at blaming? Are we good at turning the tables? Are we? No, we're horrible at it. And just like this, I mean, what does he have to say? He could have jumped in at any moment and gotten him out of the situation when all the other brothers were trying to kill him. He could have just said, "No, we are not doing this. Let's get out of here, Joseph. Let's go back. Let's get back to dad where you're safe." And yet he never stepped in. He was waiting till he could sneak in afterwards to try to take care of the situation. But yet here it is. Blame game. He says, "Therefore, behold, also his blood is required." This is really eating them up. Verse 23. "And they knew not that Joseph understood them, for he spake unto them by an interpreter." Man, Joseph has got it all hidden. They've got this interpreter in between them, and they have no idea that he's hearing all of these comments. And how many of us, in our spite, would just be sitting there giggling to ourselves? These guys are idiots. They have no idea what is going on. And yet here he is. He's keeping his cool. He's staying calm. And they have no idea. Verse 24, and he turned himself about from them and wept. Oh, you see the opposite side of this. See, some of us would be sitting there rubbing our hands together. Finally, they're getting their due. And yet he's so overcome that he turns around. And yes, a grown man cries. This is a mess. He returned to them again and communed with them and took from them Simeon and bound him before their eyes. Verse 25, then Joseph commanded to fill their sacks with corn and to restore every man's money into his sack and to give them provision for the way. And thus did he unto them. So they have no idea. He's done this all behind their backs. Verse 26, and they laded their asses with corn and departed thence. And as one of them opened his sack to give his ass provender in the inn, he espied his money. And for behold, it was in his sack's mouth. There it is, right there, right in front of them. As they hit the first rest stop, here it is. Here's all the money. Uh-oh. Verse 28, and he said unto his brethren, this is the one that we brought up earlier, the verse that we brought up from chapter 42. And he said unto his brethren, my money is restored. And lo, it is even in my sack. And their heart failed them. And they were afraid, saying one to another, what is this that God has done unto us? They're finally getting that punch in the gut that, hey, God is at work. He's moving. Their heart failed them. They know that death could be an option for them if they come back with the money right there, because Joseph's saying, hey, listen, if you don't do what I've told you to do, that's it. You're gone. God has brought them to the end of themselves. To be desperate, helpless, hopeless people. But as we know from this morning's sermon, we know that God's got an answer for that. God's got an answer for that. Turning hopeless people into ones that get to reap of God's blessing as they put their faith in Jesus Christ. I mean, see what happens there. You wonder why there's so many problems in our world today, and why can't God just bless America again? I mean, we sing it every year. God bless America, so he should just do it, right? What happens if God continues to bless America and just keep giving and giving and giving? Do you think we'd be so distracted with the blessings that we forget to turn to him? To humble ourselves, to repent? Have we been so distracted with the stuff that's in front of us that we forget the God who is actively engaged in our lives and has provided salvation for us and a life worth living? To live for him, to prepare for eternity. I mean, this is where he's brought them. So what is God doing? He's bringing people to the end of themselves. And so many times, God, what are you doing in my life? Don't you know what's going on here? Don't you see what is right in front of your face? I mean, you're supposed to be all-knowing. You're supposed to be all-powerful. Why haven't you fixed this yet? Don't we get caught up in ourselves and our own questions? God, why? And yet, He's bringing us to the end of ourselves to turn to Him so that all glory can be given to Him. That's the beauty of it all. Instead of turning in bitterness from Him, we should be turning to Him in humility. But we come to the last part of this chapter, and you're not going to get the finalization of this. You're going to have to come back. Because it's going to keep on going. And I didn't figure we could deal with, like, 8 more chapters tonight, okay? You know how long it takes me to get through one. But we get to this last point. What did you expect? You go into verse number 29. And it says, "And they came unto Jacob their father unto the land of Canaan and told him all that befell unto them, saying, The man who is the Lord of the land spake roughly to us and took us for spies of the country. And we said unto him, We are true men, we are no spies. We be 12 brethren, sons of our father. One is not, and the youngest is this day with our father in the land of Canaan. And the man, the Lord of the country, said unto us, Hereby shall I know that ye are true men. Leave one of your brethren here with me, and take food for the famine of your households, and be gone. Verse 34, and bring your youngest brother unto me. Then shall I know that ye are no spies, but that ye are true men. So will I deliver you, your brother, and ye shall traffic in the land." And verse 35, "And it came to pass as they emptied their sacks, that behold, every man's bundle of money was in his sack. And when both they and their father saw the bundles of money, they were afraid." They were afraid. "And Jacob, their father, said unto them, Me have ye bereaved of my children. Joseph is not." There it is. There we put the name in there. They just kept saying, "One is not." And he comes back, "Joseph is not. Now Simeon is not. And ye will take Benjamin away? All these sayings are against me." Do we ever respond like that? Everybody's against me. Everything's against me. It's a helpless situation. Verse 37, "Reuben spake unto his father, saying, Slay my two sons." Wow. That's a switch. "Slay my two sons, if I bring him not to thee, deliver him into my hand, and I will bring him to thee again. And he said, My son shall not go down with you, for his brother is dead, and he is left alone. If mischief befall him by the way, and the which ye go, then shall ye bring down my gray hairs with sorrow to the grave." Jacob can't take another loss. He doesn't trust these guys. Even when the oldest turns around and offers, "Hey, listen, I'll give you, you would sacrifice my two sons." Now that's a little bit overboard, isn't it? But he's desperate. Why? Why is he so desperate here? Because they were only given so many sacks of food. This famine is continuing. At some point, they're going to have to go back and get more. And if they don't go back with Benjamin, they are dead. So he offers it. But you know what? After he has done what he did and taking advantage of one of Jacob's wives back several chapters ago, how many of you would trust him? A family unit that has been brought to the end of themselves. They're desperate. But God is working. God is planning. God is moving. You've got to be able to see that in the midst of it all. We are not done yet. And you might say, "Hey, we are ending on a horrible note." No. You got to see what God is doing. God is opening up their eyes. Even as they respond to, as Joseph opens up to a trial within a trial. Here he is, he's dealing with all this, but God is moving. And we'll see Joseph's response later on when it all comes to a culmination. But he's moving and bringing these guys. He's intentionally moving to bring them to the end of themselves so they see him in all his glory. Not only for themselves, but it's a preservation of the promise started in Genesis chapter 3 and verse 15. A Messiah is coming. A Messiah is coming. So how do you respond to this? Well, how do you do when one trial hits, let alone two, three, four? You ever just want to quit? You want to give up? Man, if we lead with our feelings, sure. But we've got to lead with the truth. God is still at work. And sometimes in our tough moments in our lives, it's not just us that he's working through. It's others that are around to finally come and to see the light. Because guess what? When it gets darker around us, and we're supposed to be the light that shines, guess what? Our light just keeps getting brighter and brighter. We got to stay in the race. You got to stay in. God, you are in control. If you're struggling through this, if you're struggling through life and the trials that are hitting you, I encourage you, go through Genesis. And listen, if you're desperate enough, you're going to do this tonight. You're going to go home and you're going to start working through Genesis and you're going to pick out every single verse that God is involved with his creation. If you're desperate enough, if it's hitting you that hard, if God is revealing the issues that are here. If God is working this hard on you, go in, see all that God is doing, and see all that God meant. You're gonna be marking up almost every single verse in chapter 1. Then you move to chapter 2. Guess what? He's involved even more. Chapter 3, he's involved even more. And you're going to keep going through Genesis and see the sovereignty of God at work in his people's lives. To what? Bring people to himself. Bring people to himself. He's a good God. Let's pray. God, we thank you so much for all that you do. God, it was a tough ending to end with just this chapter, because we want to see how it all comes to be. But God, you're working, you're moving, you're revealing. God, help us. You know where each and every one of us are here tonight. You know where we are in our trials. You know where we are in the midst of the storm. You know where we're looking. You know where we're trying to find answers and solutions. God, help us just to lay that all aside and to just look to you, to put our faith in you. God, help us. In Jesus' name, amen. Let's